Kansas City's new apartment housing stock is slowly disappearing. We're talking about buildings with at least 2 units, but less than 20. It's not unlike the Peanuts at 51st and Wyandotte, where I first lived when I moved to town back in the 1980s. These days, the most common permit that owners of small apartment buildings take out is for demolition. Concerned about the plight of these small apartment buildings, the director of Kansas City, Missouri's Neighborhoods and Housing Services ordered a study on the availability, quality, and status of the city's small apartment housing stock. The study looked at a housing structure with at least 2 units, but less than 20. Now they rate as something of an endangered resource. Many of these buildings are older than 50 years, with some as old as 80 to 100 years old. They face the issues of becoming vacant and being put on the list for demolition. The loss of these historic affordable buildings results in less population density to support local businesses, as well as a lack of social inclusion and economic diversity in neighborhoods. With us now to talk about the state of small apartment buildings in Kansas City is one of the authors of this study, and that's Jake Wagner. He's an associate professor of urban planning and design and director of UMKC's Urban Studies Program. Jake, nice to have you.
Good morning, Steve. Great to hear from you.
Why do I have a feeling that economics is playing a big role in the disappearance of these small apartment buildings? Am I right about that, Jake?
Steve, you have that dead on. The reason why is because we have a market-based society that tends to allocate funding for housing in relationship to its economic value. And in these particular buildings, it is kind of a trickle-down approach to providing affordable housing, which is not necessarily working right now, as we see we're in the middle of a massive housing and homelessness crisis.
So a landlord might say, why do I worry about a building with 4 units when I can build something that contains 100 units?
Well, the kind of landlords that we worked with to do this study, and we do want to thank all the neighborhood leaders, landlords, tenants, and everyone that we interviewed to get this study done. The landlords and owners of these buildings are predominantly local. They're either in Kansas or Missouri and often in the same zip codes. And Steve, it's a little bit different than, your larger market apartments. These are not folks who are necessarily going to have the capital access to turn around and build a 100-unit building where they used to have a 4-unit building. In fact, it's a much finer-grained problem across the country, or really an opportunity across the country. And it's called the missing middle. It's this idea that anything from, 2 to 20 units is a small apartment building that's often blends right in with single family homes in terms of the size, but it's very important in terms of private market affordable housing. These are largely unsubsidized, largely owned by small owners, and they're at risk because they really haven't had programs written for them or regulations written for them to support their long-term preservation. They don't often fit with the historic preservation tax credit programs. So there's a lot of opportunities to do better than we're doing right now.
Why is the city so concerned about, the plight of these buildings, Jake, that they ordered a study of their fate? I mean, they clearly are worried about
this. Well, Steve, they're trying to save every housing unit they can. And that's just shifted in the last, 5 or 10 years since I've been doing this research. For a long time, it was mainly focusing on blight removal. The city was really big on demolishing anything that appeared to be blighted for fear that that blight would spread and continue to lose existing buildings. But, we do have a robust historic tax credit program in Missouri. We're often in the top 5 across the country in terms of state and federal tax credits for historic preservation. And what's happened really is we've realized that poverty and housing affordability are not something we can demolish our way out of, and that it's even more expensive to build from scratch. And so, can we save what we've got while we're also trying to build new construction. It's a shift of focus a little bit, but it's basically, hey, let's save everything we have because we can't afford, and we know we have a big housing affordability challenge.
You know, I always found something absolutely charming about these small apartment buildings, like I mentioned in the opening, the Peanuts at 51st and Wyandotte. I was never drawn to these massive apartment structures. When I lived over there, I became good friends with the tenants in the other three units. It was a really kind of a close-knit little group over there, and that's what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah, it's a very Kansas City thing for anybody who's spent any time here to have, you know, neighborhoods with a mix of single family homes and a wide variety of apartment buildings. The colonnades are kind of the classic, you know, Kansas City style that you see. And, you know, everybody from apparently Steve Kraske to Charlie Parker has lived in one of these at some point in their lives. And I think it does create that kind of density that generates inclusion and familiarity with neighbors. It's not a huge apartment complex where people drive in and they don't really meet their neighbors. That's obviously the charm. And, you know, the fact they're the historic buildings is a challenge, but they do contribute to neighborhood character. And as you've pointed out, to people getting to know their neighbors.
You say these buildings, Jake, are slowly disappearing. In fact, you point out that the most common permit for small apartments these days in Kansas City is a demolition permit. At what rate are these small apartment buildings disappearing these days?
Well, Steve, we looked at the last 20 years of permit data. And I can tell you from previous studies that we've done in the Green Impact Zone, which folks might remember from about 10 years ago, that the reality of demolition without replacement is a chronic problem in the third and fifth city council districts that actually goes back to the 1970s.
East of Truce, you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. East of Truce, third and fifth city council districts, a larger area than the Central City Economic Development Area, which is the area we studied for the small apartment survey. But in that, in previous studies of the Green Impact Zone and in this particular study of small apartments, we found that the number one problem is what we call demolition without replacement. So you get the demolition of a small duplex or a fourplex or maybe a larger apartment building, and you end up with a vacant lot. And you end up with a vacant lot not for, you know, a year or two. We're talking about decades, unfortunately. And so we're seeing that we're trying to solve the problem of blight with a demolition, but we're actually sort of making problems, making matters worse. And the demolition looks like the cheap alternative in the short run, but in the long run, that demolition can be very expensive in terms of other economic impacts, social impacts, and of course, the housing and neighborhood impacts. So my colleague Aaron Royals at the UMKC Center for Neighborhoods analyzed the building permit data. We had about 950 properties to begin with. We narrowed those down to just these small apartment buildings, and we ended up with about 2,000 units across 17 different neighborhoods. And when she pulled the data for a minute there, we thought it was wrong. But then we looked at it, we verified it with everyone we could, and we found that over the last 20 years, the most common building permit was a demolition permit. Huh.
And you say there are at least 50 more units that today are at risk, right?
Absolutely. Actually, Steve, during the study, we lost a building on Benton. And, you know, if you're familiar with Benton at all, it's this beautiful boulevard, one of the first north-south boulevards built and designed by George Kessler back early in the days of the Parks and Boulevard system. And it is really has some iconic buildings and houses and landmarks along it. And during this study this past winter, we lost about an 8-unit building at about 10th and Benton, around ninth or 10th in Benton, and it had a fire, and then it had multiple fires. And so we do see these buildings at risk. We know that there are about 50 units at risk right now, and we're working actively with the city's housing department and neighborhood leaders to figure out how we can get those properties stabilized quickly so we don't continue to lose. It's, you know, it's anywhere between, you know, 40 to 50 units a year. And if you keep doing that over the course of
right.
you know, a while, you're losing hundreds of units.
So what needs to happen to save these things, Jake? I mean, I assume we're talking about a lot of money here, but what needs to happen?
Well, we pointed out in the report that we need a more strategic approach to demolition. Just because a particular owner can no longer manage a building does not mean that there might not be another local buyer who might want to invest in another small apartment building. We worked closely with neighborhood leaders to identify the challenges, and often neighborhood leaders know the biographies of these buildings. We looked at data from the Compass system at the city planning department and everything. We need to stop the cycle of disrepair that leads to then a building that is beyond repair and really does need to be demolished. We recommended a fund, perhaps a revolving loan fund, where small local owners could, you know, take out capital when they have a big improvement that they can't pay for upfront, but something that would really benefit the city and the neighborhood to preserve. You know, if somebody needs a new roof or they need some major structural work and it makes sense, that kind of fund could help support the preservation of these buildings.
I imagine keeping good relations with the landlords themselves might be a good step to preserve these buildings as well.
It is. And, you know, some of our most informative folks that we had the opportunity to work with on this research are local property managers and landlords and owners. And they're really passionate about Kansas City. They love the Kansas City neighborhoods. Many property managers are actually in the business of providing affordable housing. It is small, private, market-based approach to affordable housing. So it often flies under the radar. They, you know, many of them are trying to avoid evictions. They're trying to avoid disruption, and they're trying to avoid the kinds of things that lose, you know, result losing a tenant and the, you know, the loss of funds that go into that. And so there is some real opportunity for tenants and landlords in the city to really work together to preserve these buildings. And as you pointed out, they're really important to Kansas City's historic neighborhoods.
That's Jack Wagner. He's an associate professor of urban planning and design. He's director of UMKC's Urban Studies Program. Jake, thanks so much for your time. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.